Today's podcast is sponsored by the people at Aura.com. Now, Aura offers identity theft protection, fraud monitoring, a VPN, password management, and antivirus software all in one easy-to-use app. This means that if your online accounts or passwords are leaked online, you'll be alerted quickly, which means that you can be secure from hackers, scammers, and noisy advertising companies. The narcissists are everywhere. Literally, a friend of mine signed up and Aura found his passwords 9 times on the dark web. So go to Aura.com/Dr. Carter. That's Aura.com/Dr. Carter. And use my link and you'll receive a free 14-day trial. And if you continue, then you'll be able to save an additional 40% off all plans. So thanks to the people at Aura.com for sponsoring this episode.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Surviving Narcissism podcast with your host, Dr. Les Carter. I'm Michaela, the program director, and in today's episode, Dr. Carter is joined by Dr. Judith Orloff to discuss her upcoming book, The Genius of Empathy.
Well, hi, Team Healthy. You all know that I like to bring in special guests from time to time to interview so that we can kind of get a beat on what other individuals are talking about inside the realm of healthy relationships. And today, our special guest is someone that I've been looking forward to interviewing because she's got such an expertise and a skill in communicating, Dr. Judith Orloff. Thank you so much for being with me on this broadcast. And thank you on behalf of my listeners for joining us today.
You're very welcome.
Okay. Now you're a psychiatrist there in the LA area, the Los Angeles area, and you're associated with the UCLA clinical psychiatry faculty. Is that correct? And you maintain a practice there in the LA area, and you've been on the Today Show and CNN and Oprah and the New York Times. You have your own YouTube channel, all the other media things. And so you're well represented out there, but you're also an author. And you might want to kind of give us an idea of how you came to a particular specialization that you have. I already have a copy of your book, The Empath Survival Guide, and it's chock full of excellent information. And then you have a new book that's coming up pretty soon. It's called The Genius of Empathy. So first of all, again, welcome. And tell us about how you came into this as an expertise.
Well, it started when I was a child, and I was a very sensitive, empathic child, and I was raised by two physician parents, and I have 25 physicians in my family, and very linear, logical, scientific, and I was a little girl who would sense things. I would sense people's energy. I would intuitively know if I trusted them or not, and I would have dreams, and my parents finally got so fed up with my intuitions, they said, never mention them again at home, and my sensitivities. And they said, oh, you have to develop a thicker skin rather than develop my abilities so that I can be an empowered, empathic person. They wanted me to shut them off. And so my path has been healing that and coming into my own powers and not shutting them off. I shut them off as a child and a teenager, but then I began opening them up to be my whole self. I wanted to incorporate all of my empathy and all of my intuition and all of my analytic mind and my scientific training into being a psychiatrist and an author.
And obviously going into psychiatry, it illustrates that you were more than just about surgery and all the rest, but you have to have that extra measure of being able to tune into other individuals. As an aside, when I was a little kid, I'm kind of guessing I wasn't as far into it as you, but I remember there was a young lady who had she got pregnant out of wedlock. I was like 8 years old, and my dad was talking with me about her, and I was going to have an encounter with her, and he was telling me that she was frustrated, and she kind of felt depressed, and he had to explain to me what depression was. And so it's like, okay, got it. And so when I was with her, it was a little social kind of setting. I was sitting next to her on a couch, and she was probably 20. And I just looked at her and I said, if you ever want to talk about anything, I'd be glad for you to do that. She just looked at me and I was talking to her about, feeling sad. And she looked at me and said, well, how can I possibly be sad when I'm sitting next to a little kid like you? And later on, I realized that 8-year-old kids don't do that. And when I hear you, it's kind of like you're that same kind of person. It's like, well, if you tell me that this is what someone's feeling or this is who they are, there's just this natural inclination that says, let's go into that space. I mean, is that something you can relate to on a personal level?
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
My just goes, th this is true of many empaths, all empaths perhaps, that our hearts go out to people and we want to help. But the problem is we tend to overhelp and get exhausted or go on sensory overload from helping so much. And
Yeah.
part of the skill set of being a sensitive empathic person is learning how to set boundaries, learning how not to be codependent and overhelp everyone, as you can't fix everyone. You can't help everyone. You have to be very discerning about who you help and how you receive help from other people. So it's part of the skill set I talk about in the book about
And
being
with what
open.
you said right there, it's like, oh, I so want to get into all of that in our discussion here. Okay, now I want to focus on a little bit of distinction. You can have empathy, and then you can also be an empath, and it's not always one and the same. So can you make that delineation for us?
As I look at empathy as being on a spectrum, everyday empathy, the beautiful empathy, I feel for you, my heart goes out to you. Now that's more in the middle of the spectrum and it's beautiful. Then a little bit higher up is the highly sensitive person who's extra sensitive to sensory stimuli, sights, smells, sounds, crowds, being overloaded. And then highest on the spectrum are the empath. And empaths tend to absorb the energy or the emotions from other people into their own body. And so they really need to learn how to set clear boundaries, not to do that, so they can survive and tap into their gifts, which are intuition, the ability to connect to people, the desire to help people, connecting to nature, not getting overwhelmed by crowds or excessive talking or smells, learning skills how to work with it.
Okay. Now, I want to see if we can zero in on some of the characteristics that makes an empath such a special and unique kind of person. For example, one of the things you're implying is that the empath likes to know people from the inside out. And we like to use that word intuitive as well. They can just pick up on that. Talk to us about that skill or that inclination that the empath may have.
One of the types of empaths is an intuitive empath. And if you're an intuitive empath, you can sense what's going on in other people. You get vibes about things. Some you might walk into a room, it might feel good to you, or it might feel not so good. And you have to begin to trust your intuitions. And that's part of your great empathic gift because your intuition will guide you throughout your life in helping you to make good decisions.
Okay. And then in addition, we can say that just picking up on what you're saying, the empath picks up on nuances.
Yes,
I
yeah.
might say something like, I really enjoyed this event. And someone else can say, well, I really enjoyed that event. And we're saying pretty much the same thing, but with different tone. The empath is going to pick up on that just automatically. They may read into that other individual's communication a little bit more fully than what the average Joe or Jane out there might do.
That's right, because empaths can sense energy. I could sense what's going on from you, regardless of what you're saying. There's people give off a vibe, energy, and empaths can sense that. Some people have big, wide open hearts, and it feels wonderful and warm and inviting. And other people are narcissists who have empathy deficient disorder, who don't know how to express empathy. So they're at the lowest on the empathy spectrum. And so the empath. The problem is with that, though, empaths always think they could reform narcissists out of love. If I love them enough, I can reform them. I could cure them. I could cure their horrible childhood and And it just isn't so. So many of my empath patients get stuck in relationships with narcissists for many, many years because they want to help them. And they don't understand that they don't have empathy as we know it. They're wired neurologically to be very, very different. And it's hard for empaths to get that. I mean, I go around the country telling people that. But unfortunately, narcissists can be very charismatic, very seemingly understanding, faux empathy in the beginning. They present a false front. So the poor empath is taken in by that because they haven't learned how to identify the giveaways of narcissists.
I've talked with individuals who have gotten involved with people that turned out to be a bad apple. And they might, in retrospect, look back and say, well, my beginning point with that relationship is I just want to trust you. And I just want to be tuned in. And I just assume that you'd like to do the same in reverse. And of course, that's where they get themselves in trouble. So many times they have to be trained or reminded that some individuals out there are just straight up manipulators. And not everyone is going to start with the same set of assumptions that you start with. And even if they look like they're going to be tuned in with you on the surface, it may not necessarily be that way in the long run. So I'm assuming that's something you had to learn how to coach people up in and teach.
Oh, all the time. I mean, this is the basis of learning how to not get into a relationship with a narcissist if you can help it. Sometimes they're your boss or sometimes they're a family member who aren't going away. So then you have to learn skills in order to deal with them. But for all of you sensitive people out there who are listening or you're just questioning about narcissists, you have to understand they're wired differently than you are. They're not the same as you. They don't care about you in the same way as you might care about them, even if they seem like they do in the beginning. So what I suggest to all my patients and what I write about in The Genius of Empathy is that test out the situation, create a minor conflict, don't do something their way, and see how they respond. As typically, they'll get cold, withholding, punishing, and maybe go off the grid for a while and not call you, and you wonder where they are. Because they will react if you don't go along with their plan. If you do everything they want, they're fine and nice and cheerful. But when you don't, then their true colors come out.
You know, Dr. Orloff, one of the things I've done in my past is I started out as a young therapist conducting a lot of anger workshops. And that's kind of how I got my practice going and all of that. And one of the things that I would say is that you can tell a whole lot about an individual's level of maturity by watching how they manage conflict. Mm-hmm. And it's in those moments. I mean, I can be really nice to you when you're nice to me, and I can be cooperative with you when you're cooperative with me. But the mark of maturity is, well, what happens when we're not on the same page? Or what happens when you say something and it's like, that is so contradictory to how I think or what I believe, then where do we go? Have you noticed that empaths can sometimes struggle to find where the line is between themselves and other individuals relative to that kind of thinking?
Yes, exactly. That's one of the qualities of an empath, where they can't differentiate themselves from other people. They merge with the people and they assume that people are going to be loving and their best selves, and they're going to try their hardest, and that they want to heal. They assume all these things. And I've had conversations, empaths have gotten mad at me over the years, where I say, it's not, you can't love a narcissist out of narcissism.
Yeah.
They would get mad at me and say, don't you believe in the power of love? Don't you believe in the power of compassion? And if I stick with them long enough, it's going to make a difference. And I said, I do. However, I also know you have to lower your expectations with these people and look at what they're capable of. And they're not capable of doing what you're hoping that they will do. But some people listen to me, but some people need to go right into those relationships and live them out. And it could take 20, 30 years to get out.
Once you have them,
You know, it's much harder. I work with people in my private practice on leaving a narcissist and giving them the support necessary to do that. And they need a lot of support because it's like withdrawing from a drug. And
you,
so
you have a section in your new book and you refer to it as people who have an empath. How do you refer to it? An empath deficient disorder.
Right.
And you list like narcissists and sociopaths and the psychopath. What is it that we need to understand about people who have that empath deficiency disorder that that's going to help us as we try to maneuver through those relationships?
You have to realize that they're not going to be able to love you and that they're not going to be able to empathize with you and care about your feelings. I mean, this is mind-blowing to people because they assume, everybody does, they assume we're all wired the same way. And one thing you just have to try to accept is that we're not. And some people you do need to protect yourself around, yeah. And you do need to say no to.
Okay. Yeah, you know, in fact, I did a video a while back and I define, it's called A New Way of Defining Narcissism. And I simply define narcissism as the absence of love. And then all of these other ingredients are added to that, the high need for control, the manipulative and the willingness to be exploited toward other individuals, entitlement, selfishness, and attitude of superiority, et cetera, but all of that is what I refer to as an anti-love state of mind. And it's kind of sad to have to say, well, I guess we're going to have to factor in a certain amount of pessimism when we deal with some individuals, because as wonderful and as optimistic and as buoyant as that can be to say, yes, love is the answer. Some individuals may say, oh, I agree with all of that, but then it doesn't show up in their manner of living. And we have to be on guard for that.
I agree with you 100%. And I don't think it's pessimism. I think it's developing realistic expectations of all people, not just narcissists. No, if you have other types of people, you know, that maybe they're limited in other ways. Okay. But to accurately, the genius of empathy is about having empathy in appropriate places and knowing how to set boundaries and say no, and this is not going to be good for me in other situations. And you have to have realistic expectations of people. You may want someone to be in love with you, but maybe they're not. And, you know, to keep unrequited longing for them, you know, it just depends what you want. You can do that all your life. But if you want to actually connect to somebody, you have to see who they are realistically. Some people are beautifully capable of love. Many empaths are beautifully capable of sharing their hearts with you and caring about you and listening to what's important to you. And you might have an empathetic boss. You know, somebody who really cares about you and the team. Or you might have, you know, the old style boss is the, you know, the maniacal narcissist who just rule the roost and order everyone around, and you have to do it their way, otherwise you get fired. You see, but you have to have realistic expectations of that narcissist, that narcissist is not going to be able to really listen to you. And unfortunately, what I found is that the only way to get what you need with a narcissistic boss is to express whatever your desire is in terms of how it will serve them. You know, it'll be best if I take the vacation the last week in September for the business. It'd be better for the business if I do that rather than so exhausted, I've got to take the week off.
Yeah, because they couldn't care less about that. So if you give them an incentive, then hey, let me ask you this. I've had people that I consider to be way down, you talk about the spectrum, way down that spectrum toward narcissism. And they'll actually come into my office and say, oh, I'm such an empath, because they've heard the word and it sounds pretty good. And they know that that's what you're supposed to be, I guess. Do narcissists ever have empathy? What do you think?
People with narcissistic personality disorder, full blown, do not have empathy. However, if somebody—
It's part of the definition, isn't it?
Yeah, but people with simply narcissistic traits, they have more hope of, let's say, succeeding in therapy because they don't always blame the other person for their problems. The full-blown narcissist will blame you. They'll say, you're the reason I'm here in therapy. I haven't done anything wrong.
Yeah.
And you can't go anywhere with that. You know, and I wouldn't, I mean, I don't even work with full-blown narcissists, except in special occasions. You know, I will. But
Years ago, I came across the term dark empathy, and it started making so much sense as I began to understand, you know, that they can actually mimic empathetic responses. I mean, if you say, I've had a really rough day, I can say something like, yeah, I could kind of tell that you just were seeming down. What's that all about? And I can go in there and seem to be interested. But then when we talk about people that are deeper into the narcissistic pattern, instead of them thinking, this will help me know how to love you better, they're thinking, okay, I'm collecting data. And I'm getting some information. I'm going to be able to use this one day. I mean, is that the way you, I know, and it almost sounds cynical to think that way. What do you think about that with respect, you know, dark empathy, you know, data gathering and being cognitive and understanding, but not translating it towards building bridges?
I think you said it perfectly, but I look at narcissists and sociopaths and psychopaths as extremely wounded people. And so they're it's a mental disorder from my standpoint. Although only two of those conditions are in the DSM-5. The psychopathy is not, psychopaths are not. I have no idea why. But I look at it as a mental disorder, and I have a, you know, compassion with them in that sense. I don't have compassion for their behaviors and their actions. I have compassion for their limitations. And I think it's the worst possible thing in the world to not have a heart.
Yeah.
Be able to love. I mean, that's, they might not know what a horrible thing it is because they don't know what it is to love.
So yeah. They're
deficient, and it's a terrible way to be. So in that sense, I can have empathy for them.
Yeah, I hear you loud and clear on that. In fact, I'll talk with individuals who will say, well, if you're in the presence of a narcissistic person, just kick them in the groin and that'll show them. And it's like, well, if that's the case, then you've become just like the person that you are having difficulty with. What's the sense in that? And I like your approach a little bit better. On our website, survivingnarcissism.tv, we offer various courses. One of them is entitled, This Is Me, Establishing Boundaries Despite the Controllers in Your Life. Inside each of my courses, I break it down into modules, and then each module consists of various lessons that have a video, written materials, and questions for personal reflection. And inside This Is Me, we talk about defining who you want to be and then staying inside that definition. We discuss assertiveness skills, how to stay strong without being defensive. If you would be interested in enrolling in this course or any of the others that we have, go to our website, click the courses link, and you'll receive all the information for how you can enroll. I hope you would find them to be quite helpful.
And now back to Surviving Narcissism with Dr. Carter.
Hey, I have two questions that I want to kind of ask side by side. Why do you suppose that narcissists might be drawn toward the empath? And then the second question is, why might an empath be drawn toward a narcissist?
Well, great question. I have a chapter in my book on that, on why the toxic attraction between empaths and narcissists. The empath is drawn to the narcissist because the narcissist comes across as this wonderful, interesting, brilliant, fun, empathic person.
Particularly if they're in the love bombing and I'm going to impress you kind of phase.
Right. They're pretty impressive in the beginning. However, the warning sign is the charisma. I'm very suspicious of charisma. It's very overrated. And so when I come upon a charismatic person, I'm like, you know, cautious.
Okay.
And kind of earn their, you know, the truth of their heart with me. So, you know, they're attracted to that. And And narcissists are attracted to empaths because empaths will give and give and give and take care of them and follow their wishes and just believe that they're going to win love. And so they love that. They love someone under their power because narcissists operate, they're power oriented. People ask me, why do narcissists, what do they get from this? They're power oriented. They're not oriented. They want the power that they perceive they have over another person. So it's
you remember that old Bill Withers song, you just keep on using me until you use me up. You know that one?
That's the narcissist anthem.
Yeah. Isn't that the truth? Yeah. I have it on a playlist somewhere and I just shake my head on that one. It's like, I've talked to those people on the backside of that and it's not very pretty.
No.
Let's talk about boundaries. Now, first, when you say we need to have good boundaries, the empath needs to understand how to have boundaries with the narcissist. What do you mean when you use that term boundaries relative to relationships?
Well, boundaries and learning how to set your limits with people. Know what feels good to you, what doesn't feel good to you. And it could be, I need to have some alone time in order to replenish myself. And I need to be quiet and close my door and not have any interruptions. And I love you. So somebody doesn't feel rejected. And so it's about setting that limit for empaths. They need to decompress so they don't go on sensory overload. They need to decompress. And setting a limit, just, I need to have my alone time. I'll see you later. Bye. And I have a sign on my door that says keep out, so that people know not to bother me.
Okay. I see the beginning point of healthy boundaries is having, it's actually twofold. First, you have a good definition of who you are, which is so much of what you're talking about. And then the second is having a good understanding of who the other person is. And you mentioned just a moment ago that we just kind of assume that others, if I am going to be trustworthy, I'll assume that you can be that way too. And sometimes it doesn't play out that way. And so it maybe a good word there would be having discernment or going back and picking up on those nuances and then listening to it. And so it's kind of a twofold way of thinking about who you are and who those other individuals are.
It is, but again, it's realistic expectations. When I tune into somebody or when I'm sensing empathically, I sense any kind of warning signs that are saying, okay, caution, caution, any red flags. Codependent people, I write a lot in The Genius of Empathy about the difference between codependence and being empathic. Codependent people will just, go through every boundary and not have any boundaries that they set with other people. And so they're used up. They're like that song, they get used up and they'll do anything for everybody. And so that's a problem with narcissists because that's what they love.
Yeah, they'll just drain you. In fact, I say narcissists like to empty you of yourself and then fill you with them. And if you're not tuned into that, then you can be a sitting duck for something like that. Now, sometimes the empath, they like to emphasize the loving and the kind and the patient side. And then when someone like yourself or myself comes along and we start talking about boundaries, they might think, well, but that feels kind of selfish, or maybe like I'm being judgmental and I don't want that to be the case. How do you address that with your patients?
Well, how's your energy level? How's that working for you? And most of them will say, I'm so tired.
Yeah.
Well, then maybe it's time to start setting a easier boundary or two. Empaths have to learn what their needs are and not be ashamed of them. Because empaths need alone time. They sometimes, when it comes to sleeping in the same bed with somebody, they might not like to do that all the time because they want to sleep alone. They want to go off somewhere on their own for a couple of days, or just be quiet, to just have some quiet time and not talk or not socialize. Empaths are known for wanting to be with one or two people. You know, I love having dinner with one or two people, or even up to four. But when it gets beyond four, it just gets a little too much for me. It's like too much is going
on. Sensory overload.
Yeah, yeah. Because I like to focus on people like this conversation. When we're talking, there's a free flow. But if there's too many people talking, and if you're in a loud restaurant, and there's a million people talking, empaths don't like that.
Yeah.
And so you can set that boundary and just say, I don't like going to.
So it's not selfish then to say, this is who I am. This is how I function best. And then sticking with it.
Yeah, it's not selfish, but many empaths have been brought up either in certain religions or cultures where it's not being a compassionate person unless you do everything for everybody.
Well, and kind of like what you were talking about at the very beginning, inside your own family of origin, it's like, hey, you're going too far in that direction. Back off.
Right. Yeah. But they feel that they're selfish, or, the martyr archetype, they feel that they have to be a martyr and just sacrifice every last bit of energy to help people. And I don't support that at all, because I'm a physician. And I want a longevity of my career. I want to work and work. I want to be there for many, many years to come. And so in order to do that, I have to practice self-care. And practicing self-care is learning how to set boundaries and listening to my energy, not overdoing it, and having spaces between patients. Which I supervise residents at UCLA, psych residents, and I always teach them, if they can, not to see patients back to back, because they schedule them like crazy people over there. Now, they don't have a lot of time between patients, but if you have that option, if there are any healthcare people out there who are working with patients, please give yourself a break, even if you're not an empath.
Right. And again, that's the boundaries. I know who I am. And part of it is, I don't mind saying, I have my limits. And that's just part of the human equation. We all have our limits, and I'm going to be honest about mine. In fact, let's even go so far as to say, one of the things I explain to my patients, and I'm sure you do with yours, there are times when you're really nice and friendly and pleasant that you bring an element of dishonesty to the equation. For example, if you say, hey, can you help me out on this project? And I'm thinking, I have so many things going on right now. And then I say, sure, I'll be glad to. Okay, that was a dishonest comment right there. No, I really don't want to. But sometimes the empath feels the need to go ahead and be that nice person. And it just feels rude to say no. But what you're saying is, no, sometimes that's most necessary.
It's necessary, and you can practice really wonderful ways of saying it. As I tell my patients to practice how to, what they want to say in the script before they actually do it. And the tone of voice is very important. When you say a positive no, to just say, I love you, and that project sounds incredible. I wish I could do it, but I'm just, strapped for time now, so I can't.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Awesome. So
best wishes to you. Exactly. I'm limited. There's an emotion that I know that empaths can have some struggle with, and it's the emotion of anger. And we can look at that in two different directions. One is they can be dysregulated pretty quickly, as many people can, by another person's anger, because it can get ugly and harsh and mean-spirited. And then they can have their own internal anger. And then there's that question, well, what am I going to do with this? What do you notice along those lines on both sides of that equation?
Mm-hmm. That's true. What you said in both sides, the empath has to learn to deal with their own emotions, and just being sweet and nice and loving isn't, they have a dark side too. They have the more difficult emotions, anger, disappointment, depression, fear, the whole thing. So they need to learn how to work with their anger and not suppress it. As I've seen, a lot of empaths just suppress their anger, and then they start getting these mystery symptoms in their body, and they're not connecting it to the repressed anger. And so they need to journal, they need to, hit pillows, they need to talk to their friends, you need to go out to the forest and yell, you need to get it out.
Yeah.
thing is with empaths, you don't want to build up anger in your system, like no resentments. You have to really work with letting go of resentment so it doesn't build that negative energy in your system, because you'll suffer from it. You know, empaths will suffer unless they keep clearing out their system, you know, with good psychological work and setting boundaries and getting in touch. It's okay to be angry. Everybody, there's a little bit of good, a little bit of bad in everybody. And, you know, you need to just accept that part of you that gets angry. And if I get angry, I'll express my anger, you know, maybe to a supportive person or just all alone, you know, all alone, or, to, you know, just out at the beach. But I need to get it out. You know, you.
By the way, you're talking like a California girl there out at the beach, but never mind. Anyway.
I am. Yeah, you know.
By the way, as you were talking there, I have what I refer to as the trash can effect of anger. In your kitchen, you have a trash sack. And at the end, whenever you finish a meal, you put trash in the trash sack. And let's suppose at the end of the day, you don't take the trash out. Well, one day you can probably get away with it, but then 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, more trash goes in there and it gets sour and smelly. And so what I say is you need to learn how to take your trash out, your emotional trash, on a regular basis, as opposed to just holding it in and holding it in and holding it in, and then it turns sour. And there can be all sorts of small ways that you can remove some of the anger potential. For example, going back to what you just, the illustration, I'd love to help you on this project, but I have some other things that I have going on. But, you know, thank you for asking me anyway. What you're doing is you're taking that trash out, as opposed to holding in the resentment, thinking, why does this person never care about what I'm doing anyway? And so it's those little things that we can do to minimize some of the bigger things way on down the line. And we have to, that big picture, where we're doing, where we're going, and how we manage ourselves.
That is so true. And so that is just has to be a way of life for empaths.
Yes.
Clearing of emotions and taking out the trash and having just a clear sense of themselves and not carrying around all this emotional baggage. But on the other end, you know, when somebody, you know, has a rage attack, let's say, and the empath is near that person, it can be extremely painful for them.
Yeah.
Because it's the tone of voice, it's the energy, it's the blaming, it's the shaming, it's the everything that comes out with unskilled anger. If somebody doesn't know how to express their anger in a skilled way, then it could just come out as a big dump. And I talk about the difference between venting and dumping. All right, so you if you're an empath, you can't have people dumping anger on you. It's going to be too, it's just painful. I mean, I don't know if you as an empathic man experience that. If somebody rages at you and shames you and blames you, does it hurt you? Does it hurt your body? Does it make you feel like you want to just run out of
it? I get that tightness in my gut. And sometimes I get caught up in obsessive thinking, like, okay, how could I have done this differently? Or maybe if I'd have said this or had better timing. And it can do that, can't it?
It sure can. And I've taught my patients that if their spouse, or let's say they're trapped in a car. This happened with one of my patients. She was trapped in a car with her husband, and he starts raging at her. And we talked about the possibility of that before she went out on this drive with him. And he starts it, and she just calmly says, I really, you know, your anger is hurting me a lot. I have to get out. And she got out of the car, got an Uber, and went home. And so,
and that's what that we're talking about when we say, you know, there's a healthy self-preservation. And in fact, you as a physician, you can talk about how your peripheral vision when you're angry becomes lessened and all the rest. I mean, it becomes literally physically dangerous. So good for her that she did that. So,
yes, but she did it with the coaching from me, because oftentimes people have to develop a script or a scenario of what they're going to say. If you have one relative who's a rager, you've got to pre-decide what you're going to say to them the next time you meet them.
Yeah.
Instead of just being taken by surprise every time. And so that's how empaths can protect themselves. And it's just a matter of accepting people again for who they are. If you have a rager, You can judge them, but I wouldn't waste your energy judging them. I would just develop a strategy to deal with them so they don't hurt you. You know, and
sometimes when you rehearse it in your mind in advance.
Yeah.
I am so with you, Doctor. We're talking today with Dr. Judith Orloff, and the author of The Genius of Empathy. You make so much sense. And as you talk, there's a particular therapist that I used to be in practice with that you remind me so much of. And she had a softness and a gentleness. And whenever she would speak, even if it was a word of confrontation, and you came out having to admit certain things about you that you didn't want to admit, you still want to say thank you because she was so kind in the way she'd say it. So anyway, I just see you in that category. And I mean that as a wonderful compliment.
Oh, thank you. I take it as a wonderful compliment. And it's hopefully I can be an example to others how you can be able to practice self-care and set boundaries and still have a caring countenance.
You're so right. Okay. Dr. Orloff, thank you so much for being with us here today. Now, the book that I already have in my library is The Empath Survival Guide. The new book that you have coming out is The Genius of Empathy. And kudos to you or whoever came up with that title, because that's a great title. And so thank you so much for being with us here today. And I hope it gives people some food for thought. And I hope that the material that you have on all of your media and the books and all like that can just be an adjunct to what we're talking about here today.
All right. Thank you very much. It's a wonderful conversation.
Good. And hopefully this won't be the last time that we're going to be able to talk about this too. So thank you.
Thank you for listening. Surviving Narcissism is the product of many years of work done by Dr. Les Carter. Dr. Carter is a best-selling author and therapist with more than 40 years of experience, specializing in anger management and narcissistic personality disorder. You can find more content from Dr. Carter on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube at Surviving Narcissism, as well as on his website, survivingnarcissism.tv. Thank you for joining us for this week's podcast. We are so glad to have you on Team Healthy.